श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री दाऊ जी गोपाल की जय, श्री श्री गौराध माधव की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण हरि ओम। प्रणाम टू ऑल, गुड मॉर्निंग, वेलकम। We are continuing today with our series of lectures in the context of our Japa retreat and in-depth seminar actualizing our connection with Srinam, updating what Srinam is for us in our lives and who we are for Him in His life. He has a life, we have a life, and the idea that the two shall always meet in this case. So, some brief words regarding yesterday's lecture as a recap. So we continue with today's topic. All of them will be somehow, hopefully, some thread connecting one lecture with the other one. So yesterday we were analyzing or trying to detect some of the main obstacles to our addressing the practice of chanting, japa, kirtan, etc. And as we mentioned, first you need to ascertain which the obstacles are. Be open to, be willing to to recognize that possibly there is some obstacle in my life. And then being willing to know which are those obstacles, ascertaining them and only them, working on them and eventually transcending them, integrating them in the higher, synthesis through proper work. Synthesis, integration is not just making a kit tree and putting everything together, but it's a process that takes time when everything has to be properly mixed or combined and put in its place, and that may take time, no rush. But of course, as we mentioned, while identifying these obstacles, being careful not to over-identifying with them. One thing is identifying them, other thing is identifying with them, another thing is over-identifying with them and all the headaches that will come from that. As we say yesterday, by over-identifying yourself with an obstacle, you maybe then go to the other extreme of over trying to overhide that, so nobody knows about how horrible you are, how horrible you think you are. But when you realize I'm not that, then of course there's no need to hide that which I'm not, but actually sharing that with confidence in proper sangha so we can transcended. So we mentioned a few of them, like seven or something. I won't, of course, enter into the details, but we will briefly mention which one, which were those. Can you remember?
Impatience.
Okay. Probably you will remember the one you relate more to. So Akshay needs to work on patience. Confirmed.
Emotional indifference and
impersonalism. Like emotional disconnection or indifference. Impersonalism, like another step to that same principle, if you will. Also, what, having a material
conception
of the name?
Thinking that I'm the one chanting.
Having this ego or notion, I am the chanter of the name. I'm not being chanted, but I'm the one chanter. What else?
Having
mundane thoughts, yeah, like being absorbed in mundanality, if you will. Yeah, with superficiality, or other ways of putting that, complacency. And basically that, and of course in between of all this, so many other things came or may come. And of course we were invited to do some homework in that regard, trying to go deeper into our own situation in connection to these obstacles, and what do you think may be the best steps to take in our specific situation. And of course not only we try to speak on the obstacles on the don'ts, but also we try to to concentrate on the positive counterparts of each of those, no? Which is the positive virtue, the positive attitude, the positive principle to invoke. So the negative, if you will, side of the coin may be transcendent. So today we will continue in that same light spirit. Today we will be addressing the 10 nam apparats, or sometimes called as the offenses to the chanting, And as we will see, generally we may hear them as something that we should not do, and it's okay, but also we'll try to put some strength of what we should do. And probably by concentrating on what to do, what not to do will be included in the equation. No, we may not even have to think about that, but again, sometimes in Shastra, my Guru Maharaj likes to say the best defense is a good offense. Of course, here offense doesn't mean apparat. No. But good offense to counteract actual offenses, actual apparat. No? The best, yeah. So that's the best defense, to have a proper attitude, positive attitude to address the situation. But sometimes, as I say, Shastra will say the same thing from both sides because we may need that. No? Like smarta vyasa tutam vishnu, vishmarta vyana jatu chit. Always remember Krishna and
never forget
Krishna. But I can tell you, but if you always remember, you will never forget. Or if you never forget, that means you are always remembering. So why are you telling me the two versions? Probably because we need them. We are not able to play out the implications of one version. We may not be able to always remember him means never to forget. So yeah, I always remember. I sometimes forget, but I always no. You cannot do one thing. So the two things are being said, so we have a clear understanding of what implies to do this and what don'ts are included in the do's of something like that. So we'll try to to address this now apparat in that way. But to begin with, before going to the list of 10 and trying to elaborate upon each of them, as we already mentioned, that yes, whenever we speak about not only apparat but any topic, and we are addressing many of these delicate truths or situations about our life, our practice, our journey, it's always important to deal with all these things in a way that gives hope to us, has a positive content, is sustainable in the long run, middle, long term of our practice. We practice embrace our sadhana in a way that it becomes user friendly and joyful, not like we feel like a torture, like something that I'm begging and praying for it to be finished, so I do what I really like, or that's not the idea, that won't last for too long. So we have to deal with our practice, to deal with bhakti, with Christian consciousness, in a healthy way, or in a non-neurotic way, if you want to put the other side. Sometimes that may help. Healthy implies non-neurosis. No? Again, if I say you have to be practicing in a healthy way, yes, Maharaj. In a non-neurotic way.
Oh.
But that was the same thing with healthy. I was implying the other thing, but sometimes we need... No? So today's topic, apparat, I've sometimes seen that it's been unfortunately taken or explained or understood in terms of neurosis, basically. Like you are an offensive, or you use the word to threat, to create fear, to throw someone in a guilt trip. And sometimes you even manipulate other people. Like, don't do that, that's offensive, do this or do... And the main impetus is fear. And we are not here to practice bhakti with fear. Fear has not to be the motivating force. That won't take us to Vrindavan, for sure. Even Vaidhi Bhakti sometimes is considered a type of devotion which includes this idea of fear, in the sense of, oh, I will do what the scriptures say because if I don't, this will happen to me. So I'm afraid of the consequences of not doing what I should do, and that's why I'm doing that. So okay, that's something, we have to begin somewhere. But Raga Bhakti, the path to Braj, and that has nothing to do with this type of calculation and fear, but total confidence and total, again, positive content. Raga Marg means the path of passion. A positive passion for Krishna, attraction, irresistible. And Krishna is the all irresistible. So you can be pretty passionate about the all attractive, irresistibly attracted. So that's the main emphasis. So if we speak about apparat, be careful not to do that in a way that we are promoting a type of fear that actually diametrically opposes the spirit of positive passion we want to develop. So how to define the word apparat? In a sustainable manner, if you will, in a sustainable way, in a user-friendly way, in positive terms. And again, this is not only with apparat. I remember one lecture in North Carolina, I think it was in the house of Kanuram Prabhu. We were explaining Brahma Stuti, but somehow some other topics came. I think because the previous class we had some interaction in the house of what's his name?
Krishna Chaitanya.
No. Amalsham, yeah, Amalsham Prabhu. And somehow there was some confusion about something I was explaining, and there was someone, some devotee feeling like there was some promotion of a guilt trip or something, which of course I do not blame that person. If you think that there is a guilt trip being promoted, we don't want that. Of course, that was not the case, but at least in my intention, one can perceive that. Okay, we have to clarify. So we spoke after that, reflecting on that. Of course, sometimes we need to upgrade or update our whole Gaudiya glossary sometimes, not only the word aparad. That day we were speaking about aparad, and that triggered an experience of guilt trip. So I was thinking, wow, no, even though it was not my intention, sometimes we may be carrying some whatever, past trauma or some whatever previous experience that I explain or mention even one word with my own understanding, but that triggers something very specific in the other person. And of course, we cannot control everyone's reactions, but we should as much as we can try to make sure that the idea we want to convey is very clear in each one. We watch each one's heart, and we are not just like promoting the opposite in their mind. So sometimes our Gaudiya glossary is perfect, but we have to be careful how we are defining each word when we say aparad or offense or whatever. What do we understand by that? What we are conveying by that? You follow my point? Now, if I say surrender, no, that can be a pretty heavy word. You can like send someone to the madhouse with that word. If you are not able to properly explain that, and for that first you have to understand that properly. Total surrender, divine slave, slavery. This concept that we receive from our gurus, no, in poetic terms, deep terms, but for us again, our DNA, our past samskars will go like to the Google search, slavery. No, I don't like slavery. Yeah, but this is not the slavery you don't like. This is the one you will like. Surrender. I don't want surrender. No? Because our idea of surrender, someone is pointing with a gun to me and surrender. I have no other option. I mean, this is a voluntary one. And again, aparad, and so on. So it may be good exercise to update some of those, the way we express some of these things. So again, aparad, today's topic has nothing to do with a guilt trip. Just in case, giving a caution in the very beginning. It has nothing to do with increased shame or guilt or this type of. I'm not bringing whips here, and I will give one to each of you. So, okay, now comes aparad one, aparad two, and so on. No? But basically, the very word, the very definition of the word, etymologically speaking, aparada. Aparada. Apa means without or against. Anuradha, if you want to make the more immediate interpretation of that, means Sri Radha. And Sri Radha is the personification of love. So that which goes against love, that which goes against our main interest in life, love. Or that place, if apa is without, that place where love is not present. No? That attitude that is like preventing you from the experience of love, basically. Sometimes it may be more user-friendly to describe aparad in those, which is not like some fancy imaginative explanation. It's what the etymological meaning of the word means, aparad. Or if you want to take more literally, if you say nama aparad, what means nam? Or who is nam, sorry. Who is nam?
Krishna.
So nama apa radha means Krishna without Radha. Do you want that? You want Krishna? You want to deprive Krishna of Radha's association? Actually, the goal of our life is to see how we can put them together again, how we can reunite Radha and Krishna constantly. That's the whole dynamics and currents of the Lila Brahma, how we can make the union of Radha and Krishna attain consummation again, over and over again. Not how we can separate them. So Nama Aparad will mean that unfortunate abode, if you want to put it like that, where Krishna, Nam, Krishna, which is Nam, is existing without Radha. No? As Srila Prabhupada say, Krishna is very beautiful, but next to Sri Radha, he is the all-attractive, he's especially beautiful. Like implying, without her, he's not the Krishna we are interested in. No? We want a particular version of it, if of him, Krishna. Srila Samara said the other day, no? Have you seen Krishna? The Krishna we want to see is not easy to see, because he's not alone. There are many, it's not only to see him. If I'm seeing him, I'm seeing many other ones next to him, around him, that makes him who he is. If I take Radha, Lalita, Vishakamad, Mangal, Subhadra, so if I take them out, I mean, what remains of Krishna? As our Guru Maharaj said, you deprive the Absolute from their Shakti, from the personified potencies, from their associates. What remains is Brahman, indeterminate Absolute. Without that love, Krishna becomes indeterminate. So we don't want that. So now, in that sense, you can connect that again with impersonalism. In that sense, you are making Krishna less of all that what he can be, if you will. No? And of course, we become much less of what we can be. So that basically means aparad, to go against love and therefore being deprived of the proper conception and association with the object of our love, Radha and Krishna combined. And as we will see, because but basically aparad will have to do with going against love, which of course sounds like a madness, but we may be pretty mad yet. So, but aparad means, like they say in Spanish, you are biting the hand that is feeding you. So when it's feeding you, you're instead of saying thank you or trying to give something in return, you buy the one who is feeding you, saving you. So, of course, aparad will... In the scripture, many ways, many times, it has been mentioned how aparad is not something... It's something that will make bhakti take a distance from us. Because our attitude is not the best. It's not that aparad is more powerful than bhakti. It's not that because aparad, bhakti disappears because it has been devoured by aparad. It's just that bhakti devi doesn't feel... comfortable enough in that situation, and to help us, and also to help us not to commit more aparad, she retires. So we stop attacking her, if you want to put it like that. But that's part of her humility and nobility and dignity in that sense. So, my Guru Maharaj, in that sense, when he speaks about aparad, he makes it clear aparad doesn't have to do so much with committing some mistake without knowing that that was not supposed to be done or something like this. Because sometimes the realm of aparad is extended, again, to that level, and it starts to become neurosis. You know, like you walked on the shadow of the brahmachari. You know, I curse you to become a lizard now, or whatever. So we spoke the other day. No, but I didn't know I shouldn't walk on. Okay, you didn't know. It's not aparad. Aparad has more to do with having the wrong intention, knowing what you are supposed to do and not doing that. No. So again, ideally that doesn't make sense, and we shouldn't do that. But sometimes we do very particular things. We are very particular beings. Sometimes we know some things we shouldn't do, and we still do them. So that's what's called. Basically, that's what falls into the category of aparad. Not so much making some mistake, I'd say inadvertently, or like this. But actually, again, we are told Bhava Grahya Janardana. Krishna is just taking the essence of what we are doing, the essence of our attitude. Which in one sense, it's a relief, no? If I make a mistake without knowing, he won't take that. But also it's a great challenge, because if he's not enchanted or distracted by any formality, he goes right away to our inner attitude, then the question is, okay, where is my inner attitude? Is there any? Okay, I have to work on that, because he only sees that. I cannot just cheat him. Look how nice I'm doing this on the external. But he will go through that and say, let's see, Bhava, what's your inner mood? So it's a relief that he's such an essentialist person, but it's also healthy challenge. Mm-hmm. So I try to emphasize this because, of course, these type of things are also an invitation for us to not be hypocrite, not to not be indifferent with the grace that is coming, not mistreat that. Because that's a very delicate thing, again, if a gift such as the mercy coming from Mahaprabhu and the Parampara is coming to us and we abuse that, exploit that, that's not grateful to begin with, and that may create pretty not very charming, sweet results. And I emphasize this because I've seen sometimes even devotees overemphasizing. Like, for example, some devotees may have had some problems in their life with following strictly what they call the four regulative principles. And if someone didn't follow them perfectly at some point, one may say, oh, he fell. Or she fell from the path. Oh, like, that's pretty much like overemphasizing, even to the point of demonizing. I saw her. Whatever. Smoking or whatever, taking this. But if someone engages in aparad, sometimes that's not considered as grave as such. You don't even like consider that a fall. You are not point because it's not so concrete. I mean, it's pretty concrete, but it's not like taking something or no. But it's more like a mentality, if you will, no? That may take so many forms outside. Of course, it can take the form of you, as we will see, killing a Vaishnava. That's pretty concrete. But sometimes it may be more subtle, and you don't have this kind of aparad. So you follow my point, no? So sometimes we overemphasize he fell because he, but you engage in Vaishnava aparad, which is way worse than falling from the four regulative. You don't think that was a falling, if you will, no? And actually that's, again, not to create any type of neurosis, but just to be objective about what's what, if you will, no? some bond in that connection. Again, aparad has more to do with antagonism, being antagonistic towards love. To have to develop, if you will, a spiritual apathy or something like this. So that's way worse than you may have had some occasional, you know, like, which with this I'm not trying to normalize the other thing. No problem. As long as you are not an aparad, you know, that's also, we will see that's an aparad. No? That's to engage in sin on the strength of the name. No? So, this is not aparad. This is just little thing. But then I will chant, and none will be merciful to me. So you are started to, again, to exploit and calculate, and that's not helping. You are confessing with the priest on Sunday, and you already have your list of degradation for Monday ready there. No, okay, now I'm clean again from scratch. Let's do it. Tabula rasa. So I can feel the whole. And on Sunday, when I'm about to overflow, I go again and do catharsis and ready again to go on Monday. That's not the idea.
That phrase you just used, tabula rasa, what is that?
Oh, that's an expression which means... Sorry?
Clean slate, clear slate.
Yeah, like clear slate, that you are like empty. There's nothing there, so I'm ready to start again from zero, from scratch, if you will. That was a context. Yeah. Of course, we will mention some of these aparad, and we'll mention what to do about them. And there are many types of aparad, actually, not only nama aparad. Today we'll speak about nama aparad, but there are other categories, seva aparad, dham aparad. I mean, actually you can commit aparad in so many directions. Not to create neurosis, just to understand love is a valuable thing, the most valuable thing, very delicate reality, and be careful not to attack it. Mm-hmm. So we are told in Shastra that we may be committing some aparad in other directions other than nam. And if that happens, we can counteract those aparads by taking shelter in Hari. But if we offend Hari, which can be seva aparad, for example, we can counteract even offenses to Krishna by taking shelter in the name of Krishna. As we spoke, Krishna's name is more generous, more fortunate, more powerful than Krishna's. Even if you offend Krishna directly, again, with this I'm not proposing you can do that, and then you have this other option. I'm just saying, a point to make is you can take shelter in the name in that case. But if you offend the name, that's the idea. There is no further shelter, if you will. That's why I so much emphasize this nama aparad, in the sense of you don't want to be totally devoid of shelter. And of course, if you offend the name, you are devoid of shelter. unless and until you take the proper attitude to go back to that shelter. It's not that you are devoid of shelter forever and thrown to eternal hell or any of that those things. But my point is, remember, no, the name is first class, no, non different from Krishna. No? We call the name Nam Prabhu. Nam Prabhu. Prabhu is a personal addressing to Bhagavan, to God, to a person. So the name is a person. And a person has a heart, has a particular taste, if you will, and can be displeased or displeased with certain things. So if we want to establish a relationship with someone and a relationship of love and service, we will be concerned about what pleases you, I will do that. What displeases you, I will avoid that. Because I want to please you. I love you. So Nam is a person, he has his own style. So we want to align with that. So in that sense, these 10 namaparas can be considered things that won't be pleasing to the object of our affection. And I hope that they will make sense. No, it's not just like an ultra bizarre, eccentric demand that, what? No. How Krishna can be pleased or displeased with the, he's such a, I mean, it makes perfect common sense if we are sober. So let's appreciate them. So let's go to the list. This list of 10 namaparas is found mainly in Padma Purana. And some sadhus point that this list actually can be understood as referring to the name of Shiva. So offenses to the name of Shiva, because the word Shiva appears there. But actually, the context in which that appears can be taken in different ways. For example, why we Vaishnavas apply that to the name of Krishna, because for us, every name of the devas, including Shiva, is first and foremost the name of Krishna, and then secondarily indicates somewhere else. No? Like similar to what Mahaprabhu talked as a grammar teacher, as we said the other day, every word is the name of Krishna first, and then something else. So we could say that, because Shiva means auspicious. So for us, of course, what's the most auspicious thing possible? The name of Krishna. So first and foremost, Shiva is the name of Krishna. There's a whole list of verses in, I think, Padma Purana also. Jiva Goswami quotes them. And he lists all the possible, not all, but most of the main names of Shiva that everyone knows. And he actually shows how all of them first apply to Krishna. Shiva, Mahadev, Mahesh, Ish, and so on. So that's one way of understanding this list that's applied to Krishna. And also, again, if you take Shiva as auspicious as an adjective, this refers to the auspicious Krishna Nam. So Shiva can be, again, first the name of God and then of the Deva, or as an adjective, something auspicious. There's nothing more auspicious than Krishna Nam. So that's it. Let's go to the 10 namaparats, beginning with the first one, which is Satam Ninda. I mean, I don't have a whiteboard, but it's Satam Ninda, which means to offend the sadhus, the Satam. Satam is another word for sadhus. Dharma Prito Kaita Votra Paramonir Matsaranam Satam. So that refers to those who live for Sat, who live for the truth, who are truthful, who are honest, who have authentic people. That's another way of saying it, sadhu. So ninda means to offend the sadhus. So in one sense, this will be considered the worst of all apparats. In other sense, many apparats will be considered the worst, no? As you will see. As our Guru Maharaj gave a lecture that some months ago in Poland, as I told you the other day, which is the most important member of the Panchatattva. And he explained, it can be all of them, depending from where you approach them. So which is the worst apparat? It can be all of them, or most of them, depending which point or emphasis you want to make. So why Satam Ninda can be taken as the worst of all offenses? What does your devotional logic tell you? Sumati.
Because we receive the holy name from the sadhu.
Yeah.
He's our link to the sadhus, are linked to Krishna.
Okay, that's a way. Yeah. That may be even more applicable in the third one, that is like a version of this, which is connected with the guru. But yeah, it's also applicable. No? Yeah, but in general, of course, the principle is Bhagavan loves his devotees. That's who Bhagavan is. The Bhagavatam is saying Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam. That's a very unique definition of Bhagavan. Generally, we know the famous definition of Parasaramuni. Bhagavan is he who has these six Aishwaryasya, all these opulences. But Sukadeva Goswami says Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam. Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. That's Bhagavan for us, the devotee of his devotee. You can imagine how much Bhagavan is, his identity as Bhagavan is dependent on his identity as a devotee of his devotees. So if he is who he is because of his devotees, if you attack his devotees, I mean, you don't think that he will be pleased by that. And he's not different from the name. So the point is, Srinam loves his devotees. Bhagavan loves his devotees. They are his heart and vice versa. So he won't tolerate if you are attacking those who are most dear to him. Again, that's the logic of love. We may like to say, okay, God is impartial to all, but here we're speaking about Krishna, who is specially partial to his devotees. He's partial to those who are totally given themselves to him. He remains impartial by doing that, by being like that, actually, because he's giving himself fully to those who are giving themselves fully to him. So he has to reciprocate accordingly. So if you attack those, of course he will do something about it. He won't say, I'm impartial, keep attacking my devotee. No, that's not how love works. So he won't tolerate if you attack those who are dear. Again, the idea is, if you're a sincere practitioner, that will never happen. If you understand how dear the Vaishnavas are for Bhagavan, and you want to love Bhagavan, and you want to love the Vaishnava, you are immediately protected from this offense, but just in case the point is made. Because again, the Vaishnavas themselves are also the givers, Sumati pointed, the givers of the name. So if I'm attacking the one who is giving me the name, I cannot expect that the name will flourish in my tongue. It's again biting the hand that is feeding me. So Skanda Purana unpacks this first offense and mentions six possibilities of how you can offend the devotee, from the grossest, if you will, to the to the more subtle, if you will. So the grossest is to kill a Vaishnava. Hopefully that's not planned in your today's agenda. So to kill a Vaishnava. Again, one may say, Maharaj, I won't do that. Okay, but just in case, I mean, it has happened in history. So, just in case the point is made. Don't kill a saintly person, of course, Maharaj. Well, I mean, sometimes saintly persons are killed, especially killed, so, for being saintly. Then don't kill a saintly person. Second, don't blaspheme a Vaishnava. No? To open your mouth, to make it public. No, not physically aggression, a physical aggression, but verbal aggression, which of course sometimes can be even worse. No, speaking about bad to the Vaishnava or speaking bad about the Vaishnava to other person and spreading rumors and whatever, gossip. And that's the second one. Third one, a little bit more subtly, mental platform. To think bad about the Vaishnava, think like wrongly. It's another degree of. So it's more subtle. Nobody knows, you have not opened your mouth, you have not jumped onto the neck of that person, but in your mind something is there. So that enters into that category. Again, there are degrees of gravity. Gravity or graveness? Gravity. But still is considered. The fourth one is not to greet a Vaishnava properly when you see him or her. No, not to welcome. Again, this is not just a formality, but just like a natural way of, if you understand what's Vaishnavism, again, as Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say, we practice Vaishnavism, which means the worship of the Vaishnava. Not the worship of Vishnu per se, but the worship of love of Vishnu, love of Krishna, Vaishnava. So not to greet properly a Vaishnava. A fifth one is to be angry with the Vaishnava. Which somehow may be tied to the other ones, but anyhow. And the last one is not to feel joy when seeing a Vaishnava. It's another way of putting something similar. No? You see a Vaishnava, you see someone, and of course, when you say Vaishnava, there are so many degrees of Vaishnava. But nonetheless, if the principle of Vaishnavism, the principle of sanctity, of someone willing to establish a life, divine life, is there, and that person is coming, even though that person still has many mistakes and things to work on, still is a Vaishnava. So if we don't separate, okay, with your homework yet, and your Vaishnava side, and you just, oh, this guy is coming again. And you're like, oh, I have to see his face, I have to say hello. And you lose sight of the Vaishnavism in that person. As where Guru Maharaj likes to say, there is a little bit of Radha in every heart of every devotee. So if you don't want to welcome that, to acknowledge that, that's a form of aparadha. Aparadha, remembers, means without Radha. But there is a little bit of Radha in the heart of every devotee. If you don't want to see her where she is, that's also a form of aparadha. Mm-hmm. In this connection, it's interesting that in Shastra we find that sometimes we are prevented from engaging in not so much aparadha, but even sin, no? Like sinful activities, and it says be careful with lust, with anger, with greed, with envy, which of course we are not promoting them. But also we know that those are not actual things that will affect bhakti directly as aparadha does. Mm-hmm. Guru Maharaj makes the difference between the two, sin and aparadha, papa and aparadha, like sins of the flesh, sins of the soul. But sometimes we are prevented from those things, like Raghunath Das Goswami does in Manasiksha and other places, because if you are, okay, envy doesn't necessarily attack bhakti, but if you're envious of a Vaishnav, that becomes aparadha. So you may be angry, and that's necessarily affect bhakti, but if you're angry at the Vaishnav, that becomes aparadha. And so on. No? All these sinful things, when applied to Vaishnavism, they enter into the category of sadhu ninda. We will say that that's the main emphasis, why we are prevented of those things as gaudiyas. No? Because that can transform in aparadha, Vaishnava aparadha, and we don't want that. Srila Rupa Goswami makes an important point in his Upadeshamrita that we should not. Here we give the example of the Ganges and the foam in the Ganges, and still Ganges remain Ganges, spiritual water. So don't judge the Ganges by the apparent flaw floating there. So similarly, when you see a sadhu, be careful of not, or a Vaishnava, don't judging that person by any physical imperfection. Or, he says, even by something more subtle in connection to his or her nature, acquired nature, her subtle body, if you will. Because that's not the person. You are not seeing the person for all that they can be, as we always say. You may be judging the person for who she or he is, who he or she was. But the idea is you have to judge someone according to what they want to be and all that they can be, their ideal, their potential. Especially in connection to an advanced sadhus, this is a very big warning. Because a great saintly personality, even maybe a little grumpy. Now, it's not that the topmost sadhu will be floating in the air and smiling for every picture. There are cases of famous great Mahabhagavats who are like grumpy or have this type of thing. They're like, why is he speaking like that? Why is he doing like that? You may like mix everything and not separate their Vaishnavism from, of course, this is not an excuse to be angry and, oh, this is part of my lila or something. But in some cases, Krishna will keep some of those things. But in the context of pure devotion, that little grumpiness, if you will, becomes like an ornament, if you will. Now, even in the lila, you will find that. Madhu Mangal becomes grumpy sometimes, becomes angry, starts to curse and. But in the concept of the lila, that we are all charmed by that. So there is place for all those so-called anarthas, even in the lila, but in such a context that they are nourishing. But with advanced sadhus, again, we have to be careful, especially, for example, Vrindavan Das Thakur makes the caution, when two advanced personalities are having some difference of opinion, and maybe like quarreling, apparently, be careful of you standing in between them. Sometimes the example is with two bulls. No? And maybe the bulls are fighting, But for them, it's like exercise. They're playing. But if you get between them, you will be dead. For them, it's exercise. For them, it's game. For you, it's death. So similarly, you know, if you enter in between two great personalities having some discussion from, and you take sides and you start to, oh, he's correct, he's the one, and the other one, Vrindavana Thakur over and over again, Chaitanya Bhat, and it's like warning, don't do that, don't do that, be very careful. So again, to attack a bhakta basically means to attack bhakti. Take it like that. I mean, to show disrespect by verbal, physical, mental aggression, to urging others to see the Vaishnava poorly, or secretly degrading that person in your own mind. All those falls in the category of violence to Bhakti Devi. It's important to connect Bhakta and Bhakti Devi, the goddess of devotion inhabiting that particular heart. So that will be a tough predicament, we could say. Because also, especially if one gets accustomed to that, you know, and you enter into that loop, and somehow you become blocked from the grace of Bhakti, and probably it's likely that you may end up committing more offenses out of the pain of frustration. And you create like a, how to say, like snowball that is feeding itself, and it becomes like a vicious circle or something. So it's very important to know how to break the loop, basically. And even sometimes it's considered to offend the Vaishnavas to just passively witness that. Maybe you are not the one speaking, thinking, doing, but someone else is doing that. You know that's aparat, and you are just like sakshi, as we say, as the witness of that, but you are not doing anything about that. You are just like, you are not engaging in a sin of commission, but in a sense of omission. No? And of course, in Shastra, we have strong words. Shastra says something strong for those who witness that, and we need to maybe explain then. We need to update the glossary, as we say today. No? Scripture will say, if you are witnessing someone offending a Vaishnava, and you are not able to counteract it, well, two main options. Let's begin cutting the tongue of the offender, first option. And if you cannot do that because the person has small tongue or has closed her mouth or something, then kill yourself. So you're like, oh my gosh. Now Jason is thinking, oh, these guys seem nice till now. And now they are speaking about cutting tongues and killing themselves. I came to a suicidal cult or something. A cutting tongue sect. We won't cut anyone's tongue. We won't kill ourselves, no problem. The point is, sometimes the scripture will speak in a certain way. This is said thousands of years ago in a certain language and culture. And this is not to be taken literally. Now, there are many sections in the scriptures which are not to be taken literally. Not in the context of our modern moral view and so on, but they are meant to, how to say, to impress on us about the severity of, and in this case, even just hearing criticism of a Vaishnava, like playing what to speak if you yourself are doing that. But it's not speaking about kill yourself, kill others, cut others' tongue, but just they give this strong, like, symbology of cutting the tongue, killing. To make like the impression this is not to be done, but not necessarily promoting do that, actually. So it's important that we understand those sections in the scripture in that sense, because if not, then no, you read Bhagavad Gita and you become a serial killer, basically. If you understand Krishna is telling Arjuna, kill your relatives, and you will first go, oh, okay, now I have to follow the Gita. Mom, are you there? Okay, I'm going. I just need to stop in the gun shop for a minute and see you in a few minutes. I'll share with you the conclusion of the Gita. But of course, the conclusion of the Gita, that is not that. Sarvadharmam parityajaha. It's not kill them all, but kill your ego, basically. No? So again, that's why sometimes they are told you need to study the sacred texts with a guru or with someone who knows what's the intention of the text. Because you can, I mean, you can whatever, no? You can read chapter 11 and become inspired to create the atomic bomb, no? And that was the case. The creator of that got inspiration from the Gita. So that means, that shows parampara is necessary. Anyhow. So the idea, of course, in this particular case, if you witness someone offending a Vaishnava, you should basically try to counteract the offense in the sense of trying to help the person to understand that's not good what you are doing. And if that's not possible, then you are invited to leave the place, basically. No? Period. No more than that. Everything else is to make it clear how severe that can be. And of course, how to eradicate offense to a Vaishnava, whether we engage in it or not. Common sense replies. If I became aware of that, I'll try, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, if you offended a Vaishnava by physical aggression, hopefully not, you have to offer your body physically to render service to that person. If you offended the Vaishnava verbally, you have to beg forgiveness through your mouth, if you will. And you have committed offense in your mind, you can beg forgiveness from your mind. Again, not like that in my mind it will be more comfortable. I mean, in all the levels it has to be the same anutta, or the repentance, the fire, as we say the other day. So, and if not, some reaction will come, not to go neurotic, but I mean, there's reactions to actions. No, Noam Komodi says that. No, it says like an offense to a great devotee is mitigated in two ways, by suffering the result or by the grace of that devotee. No, in other words, if I committed an offense and I go and beg forgiveness sincerely, the devotee will show grace and the offense is mitigated. If I don't do that, some suffering will come to my life as a result of that offense, and I will have to go through that suffering, and then the reaction to the offense is mitigated. And hopefully I'll learn my lesson and not repeat the same thing over and over again. Again, all this, if we are sincere in acknowledging the offense and begging for forgiveness to the person offended. Of course, that's the situation when Vishnu told that to Durvas, no? He offended Ambarish, and Durvas was asking forgiveness to Vishnu. And Vishnu said, I have nothing to do here. You go and obtain forgiveness from him. I cannot do anything here. It's like if I offend Kishore and I go to Sumati, Sumati, please forgive me my offense to Kishore. And Sumati said, I don't have nothing to do. Go to Kishore. He's the involved person. So again, this, if you pay attention, I think there's lots of common sense how to not only how to counteract, of course we are speaking how to counteract, but even better is how not even to having to counteract, because we have not done that. And what to do in that case, the positive version of not offend the Vaishnava, what will you say?
Serve the
Vaishnava. Serve the Vaishnava. What else?
Glorify.
Huh?
Glorify.
Again, not as a way, I will be doing that so I don't offend him. You follow? It's not only like, okay, I will do that so I don't fall into apura. No, I want to love the Vaishnava, to appreciate. No, Priti Lakshananda, Rupa Goswami will say there are different exchanges of affection between practitioners and devotees. Snigdasya, the Bhatan say, try to be affectionate to the Vaishnava. So if you are affectionate with someone and loving and so on, automatically nothing of all the things that I burdened you with for the last 15 minutes, nothing of that will come, you know, if you are properly giving yourself affectionately. So that's the real solution, to anticipate in such a way that you don't even have to think about counteracting. But just in case, the scripture will say, if you do that, okay, this is the way to counteract that. Hopefully you don't have to counteract that, but just in case. The point is, even if you do it, there's always a way to counteract that. There's always hope. Again, there's never the point that, no more hope for you, sorry. No. The doors of grace have closed forever. No. That's not happening. But we have to do our part. To be sincere, to beg forgiveness, to feel the need of being forgiven if we did something wrong. Again, in a healthy way. No, not in a neurotic way. There's a healthy point to all that. Okay, let's go to the second one. This was a little bit long because it's one of the main ones and it's represented in another ones, but now we will go a little bit quicker, probably. Second one is to consider the name, attributes, qualities, and so on of of Shiva, and sometimes it is said by extension of other devas, as independent from those of Krishna. In other words, and this is in connection to the name, in connection to which sense that when we chant the name, we understand the name is not different from Bhagavan. But there are names of Shiva and so many other names of other persons, if we want to see those names related to other persons, which are not exactly on the same ontological position as Krishna Nam. In other words, the devas and Krishna are not the same in the same position, and therefore their names are not in the same position. There's only one absolute. And this applies a lot if you go to India, you understand more why this offense is there, because in India there's lots of polytheism as well. At least that's how many people understand revelation, not because revelation necessarily is promoting this, but many people have their own, like, endless pantheon of personalities, so they know who to pray according to what they want or what they need. Okay, in this particular desire, Ganesh. With this one, go to Parvati. This one, Mahadev. This one, Saraswati. Okay, so they have their own, everything fixed, if you will. To Vishnu, no, better don't go there. Just Yaham and Ugrina, he may take everything away from you. So no. Just be careful in that direction. Watch out, all those blue guys. No? Vishnu, Krishna, we're aware of that. So the point of this offense is that basically try to give Bhagavan his own throne, his own place of honor. No? And that's his supreme position in connection to every other living entity, including Shiva. Mm-hmm. There's only one absolute truth. Of course, Shiva Tattva is another topic altogether. But there is a difference established between us, well, Vishnu and Shiva. And of course, this doesn't mean disrespect the devas, no? Because we can go to that extreme and start to insult, and these devas are like this and are like that. They are bhaktas. Most of them are sakama bhaktas, which means devotees with still some material desire in that. So who are we to criticize them? Well, probably we may be in that category with some good luck. We are bhaktas, he admits. So again, we are not to confuse devas with deva, with capital letters, with Krishna's deva, as Arjuna called him, the deva of the devas. No, he's the deva of the devas, then the devas. No? Gods with capital G, God with capital G, gods with non-capital G? Small G, okay. So that on one side, that on other side, that doesn't mean you will criticize the devas, you will properly respect them as devotees, and at the same time, doesn't mean you will fall again into polytheism and everyone is the same and you make a hodgepodge, theological hodgepodge, and everyone falls down. Because that's offensive. But again, amani namanadina, you have to still respect everyone. What to speak of respect the devil? You have to respect everyone, every living entity, etc. And as we say before, every name of the deva, all of the devas and all of their names, first and foremost, are a name of Krishna. So that's another way of connecting this offense. No? Okay, the devas are subordinate personalities to him, so even their names, which speak about qualities, auspicious one, Shiva, the boss, Indra means boss. So Krishna is first Indra. No? He's Indra. The name of Krishna is Indranath, who is the boss of the boss. No? Something like that. So all these names of the devas are first names of Krishna, as we say, even single word. So we could say that the way of, again, counteracting the offense or even not falling in that to begin with will be to have proper sambandha gyan, to know who is who, what is what, and how to relate with everyone and offer proper respect to everyone accordingly. Like when we are told you have to there are different degrees of devotees and we should respect all of them accordingly. When you make differences between degrees of devotees, it's not to disrespect the junior. It's just make the difference to properly honor that person in a way that is fitting to their situation. So it's to honor them properly and making the difference, not to create a disrespectful hierarchy or something like that. So this will be the way to deal with this offense again. If we realize we have engaged in that one, always sincere repentance, taking shelter in Sri Guru and the Vaishnavas, and especially increasing our Sambandha Gyan, our education about the position of Krishna and everyone else, and properly honor every living entity, devas included in this case. Okay, let's continue. The third one is Guror Abhagya. This may be other one of the worst one for some. Another possibility of seeing this as the worst. Guror Abhagya means to neglect the guru or to neglect the principle of Sri Guru. This missing of Guru Tattva or something like that. Sometimes, for example, when Jiva Goswami is elaborating this Nama Parat in his Bhakti Sandarbha, he's not going into this offense, because he sees this as a special case of the first one, sadhu ninda, offenses to the sadhu of guru. Of course, guru is also in part of that, so he just mentions it and continues. But we will say a few words and continue there. As I mentioned, from some perspective, this can be seen as the worst of all them, because, of course, as we say, guru is the one giving me the name. So if you attack or offend the one who is giving you the name, how do you expect name to remain with you? And also, ideally, we learned from the guru which are the 10 offenses and how to avoid them. So if you ignore the guru, it means you're ignoring Nama Parad, you're ignoring the instruction, you're ignoring the knowledge of how to chant the name. You follow. So you are ignoring the name, basically, as in itself. No? It's generally, when the guru is giving the name, giving Harinam many times, so what Guru Maharaj does, he's giving Harinam to someone, and he will go through these ten apparats and try to explain them briefly, or not briefly, but explain to make the case, this is to be, you have to have this present in your mind, no? Because as the Shastra many times say, no, we already spoke about the glories of the name and all these wonderful things, and as we started yesterday's class, but sometimes I don't feel that wonder, sacred wonder. Why? One way of putting that, apart from yesterday's obstacles, is apparat. Again, yesterday and today's topics may be intertwining with each other, but many verses in Shastra is saying that, no, due to apparat, and again, this is not guilt trip, you are the bad guy, but just for you to know why this is not happening, probably it's an invitation to investigate, explore your heart and see what we can do. Because if not, if we don't have that type of attitude, we may project doubt, cast doubt on the name, probably. If it's not about me doing something not correct, then the mistake may be on the name, on bhakti, and that can happen, and it's, of course, can damage our faith. So, some point also in connection to this, to the point of Guror Abhagya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that a devotee of the highest caliber, Mahabhagavat, due to his or her humility, it's said that the greatest devotees have the greatest humility. They are kind of synonymous. So that person won't take any offense personally. They won't feel how the person offended me, because they will think, who I am. I'm nobody, so I'm not a Vaishnava. There's no Vaishnava Parat in this case, and so on. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that, he said the greatest personality is not taking offense, but the dust of the feet of those devotees won't tolerate the dishonor to their master. Like making the point, because I've heard this sometimes in some devotees saying, a great Vaishnava never feels offended, so you cannot engage in Vaishnava aparad because they don't feel offended. It's not like that. You follow me? Because it's on a subtle level, you say you can do whatever you like, but they are so humble that they will never take offense. So you don't bother about all this today's class. You just do whatever you like. And they are humble, so they won't be offended to you. It's totally abusive mentality. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes this point. They may not take that personally due to their humility, but that doesn't mean there won't be a reaction. So he kind of illustrates that, referring to the dust of the feet of those devotees, to make the point, there will be a reaction, especially if you calculate in that way. Now, it's another way of this idea of committing sin on the strength of the name, here's another way. No, committing aparad on the strength of the Vaishnava's humility or something like that. That's how you want to relate with the Vaishnava? No, that's your project? Please, no. So how to counteract that, or how to even avoid this to happen again? Relating in a very affectionate, humble mood with Sri Guru, Visrambena Guru Seva, with confidence, with friendship, feeling the Guru as my dear, closest friend, great guardian, so many things we can meditate on that figure. Beta tuam sumyatat sarvam tattvatas tadanugrahat brijasnikdasisisyasya gura boguhyam apyutasisivavatam. To that disciple who is affectionate and humble, the Guru will reveal to him, to her, all his secrets. All the secrets from the heart of Sri Guru will go to the disciple's heart. If the disciple is, again, humble, sincere, affectionate. And if we realize I committed Vaishnava Apara, then okay, you go to that sadhu, you proper repentance. Again, the formula to counteract will be basically the same in every Apara. Now, be sincere, be honest, repent in a healthy way, increase your education about how you can avoid that next time. And naturally, if you are sincere and affectionate, Srila Gurudev will forgive, of course. It's not that I don't forgive you. No. The forgiveness is there, the humility is there, but we have to do again our part, as nice disciples. Nice section to get further samskaras about how it looks to be a nice disciple. You can study when Krishna was himself a disciple of Sandipani Muni in the Gurukul along with Sudam, and they were serving their Guru with so much dedication and simplicity and joy and affection, and going through hardships for the pleasure of their Gurudev, but so much came from that in both directions. So it's important to make some also effort in not to neglect the principle of Sri Guru. Don't be neglectful when serving Sri Guru, or pleasing Sri Guru. We should put some effort in not being neglectful. Again, not like over endeavor and forcing us to do anything, but just I'm supposed to love that person. That's why I accepted her shelter to begin with. So I want to give my life in that direction. Sarva artha atmarpanam guru, says the Bhagavatam. That's it. What you can give in payment in reply to your guru. It says your whole wealth, which means all that you find valuable in your life, that's the currency to pay back. And sarva artha atma, and your whole being, that's to be offered. Why? Because to begin with, that person is offering that to you even before you start to die. So it's not an abused or dysfunctional relationship. Actually, if everything is in place, that's coming to you in the first place. So just now you are invited to reciprocate accordingly or something. So some words about Guru or Bhakti. Let's go to the next one. The fourth one, which is called Shruti Shastra Nindanam. Shruti Shastra Nindanam means, Ninda means again like Sadhu Ninda, like offenses in this case to Shastra, or Shruti, revealed knowledge, to scriptures, sacred texts. Another way of abusing the principle of revelation that can take the form of Sadhu, Guru, or Shastra. We always speak Guru, Shastra and Sadhu, so we have a corresponding apparat to each one of them. To make the point, no? Be careful of not attacking these portals of revelation coming to your life. Especially when it is a Shruti Shastra Nindanam, this refers to Shruti, to Smriti, which are also sections or texts that profusely sing the glories of the name. I mean, we know about the name by Shastra. So if you attack that revelation that makes us aware of the name, I mean, again, it goes against our own interest of the name. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha quotes one verse from Kurma Purana, interesting verse. It says, hostility toward one's guru is millions of times worse than hostility toward the deity. To contradict the authorized conclusions of scripture is atheism, and to do so is millions of times worse than hostility towards one guru. So he makes an interesting point here. he presents like offense to Shastra is worse than offense to the Guru, even. As we say, no, every offense can be seen as the worst here. Why criticism of Shastra is described as even more, how do you say in English? Grievous. Okay. Why is mentioned as more grievous than criticism of the Guru? Because the Guru derives his own authority from Shastra. No? As we know. Whenever we hear the definition of Guru, immediately, Shabdi, Paricha, Nishnatam, he's expert in Shastra. You know, if you take out Shastra, Guru is no longer Guru, basically. No? He's based on Shastra. We know the symptoms of the Guru from Shastra. Shastra is defining who is a Guru. So in that sense, the emphasis is made to offend Shastra is even worse than to offend Guru. I mean, includes the offense to the Guru, because you can know who is the Guru by Shastra. And again, how to counteract this, or how not to hopefully fall into that, having proper awareness of the principle of divine revelation, of Shastra, honoring, respecting that. But if not, we can, as we can offer, if we offend Guru, we can go to Srila Gurudev, fall at his feet, her feet, beg forgiveness and so on. In this case, if we feel we have offended Shastra some way or another, by whatever, distorting its meaning or trying to explain it away according to our particular desires, who knows what, we can go to Srimad Bhagavatam, who for us, Gaudiya, is the king of all Shastra. And we can offer some flowers and tulsi leaves, it is said, like it's a person, if you will. No? As you go to the Guru and you offer pranam to the Bhagavatam, offering a little bit, no, to this essence of all Shastra, I'm begging for mercy to overcome this particular tendency, this particular offense. Which again, all this is connected with the name, remember, because if you go to the Bhagavatam, the glories of the name are extolled there, the whole Bhagavatam is about that, as we will see. So try to always keep in mind how all the things affect your chanting, if you will. They're not just like disconnected in other directions.
I was reading one of the books in the bathhouse of different devotees who had spent time with Prabhupada before his...
A Friend to All, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
That's a very nice book, yeah.
One devotee was mentioning how when Prabhupada was staying at the Radha Damodar temple, he would decorate all his scriptures with tulsi leaves. He placed tulsi leaves on all
of them. Yeah, that's a very nice thing. Of course, it's not just external thing, but it's coming from some particular, as you say, concern. Many, many cases before opening Shastra or speaking Bhagavatam, sometimes the whole article to the Bhagavatam is done. Now, and the Bhagavatam will be carefully like covered by certain cloth and open in a very careful way. Again, it's not about like following a formality and you have to do like this, but out of a real concern and preoccupation with, oh, this is so special for us. So that creates the proper awareness, okay, what's about to come now, basically. No? Not just like, okay, like Mangalacharan or things like this, you are like preliminary preparation for what's to come. Okay, let's go to the fifth one, still we are half our way, so bear with me. Fifth one is Arthavada. Arthavada means like to consider that the praise of Srinam is exaggeration. Whatever Shastra says or whatever we will hear from the sadhus. Because as we say, I think some days ago, there are verses in Shastra. On one side we see that there are verses in Shastra when speak about the name seem to be exaggerated. Now, they will say, if you just pronounce once this name, or even one word from the name, or even one syllable of the name, even without being aware of the meaning of the name, this will give you liberation from samsara. And you will like, okay, wait. I mean, that's too much. Okay, I understand name is glorious, but just one half an inattentive syllable will bestow mukti. I think the author that day was a little bit like over-enthused or something. So that's not the idea. The idea is there's no exaggeration there. Of course, what does it mean, the name, and what does it mean, all those type of things? And of course, on the other side, we know that there are certain sections of Shastra that do exaggerate. But not regarding the name, but regarding other things to promote other attainments that people may be after. And they go to Shastra, and Shastra will have sections to support their longing, if you will, no? To go to Swarga, to experience heavenly delights, and they will call the heavenly delights of Swarga as eternal. And you say, oh, eternal, okay, let's go there. And we'll drink Amrita, as this is called in the Swarga, nectar of immortality. Immortality in the sense of, yeah, their life is pretty long compared to ours. That's not eternal, if you study the whole of Shastra. But Shastra may take some license to exaggerate, to promote something that needs to be promoted. There's place for that. But the point is, in relation to the name, whatever is mentioned about the name is never an exaggeration. But actually, we should think, there are always words lacking about properly glorifying the nature of the name. That's the nature of the name. No. You can never say enough. Ikshati na shabdat. No. Always, Shastra will recur to this famous like symbol, image of Ananta Shesh. And at this type of moments, there's always Ananta Shesh will be invoked. No. Ananta Shesh remains eternally with unlimited heads trying to chant the glories of, and then you feel according to the Mahaprabhu, Bhagavad, the name, and still today, it has not reached the end of that. And it's all that's true. No, I mean, not only in one or the other. So that will be the fifth offense, to consider those things. Exaggerated because probably we may think, oh, but I have chanted for so many years, and it's not happening what this verse says that will happen if I only chant once. Yeah, but what does it mean when the scripture says to chant once? No, and it's not considering the influence of aparat and all these type of things. So we should be very careful not projecting our own, if you will, imperfect experience and conditioned the statements of Shastra, which are speaking from another perspective without considering the obstacles that we may keeping with ourselves or something like that. So we should be careful about this, and of course counteract this by proper educating ourselves, properly educating ourselves about the, as we say on the first class, second class, the glorious ontology of Srinam. And also, as we said also in that class, developing proper Shraddha or faith in the Achintya Shakti of Srinam. How inconceivably powerful is the name, and how many things can happen. If we have that faith, that sometimes is the problem. That we say, no, but this Shastra is saying just this, but I try and it's not happening. But you are, the way you are telling it shows that you don't believe what that's saying. So you have chanted, you have tried without believing that that's true. And that's why it's not happening. If you will believe that, have proper full faith, that you will have a particular result. And faith is the active principle in whatever we do. Even if you take whatever, anyhow, let's continue. Sixth offense. The sixth one is Harinam Nikalpanam. Harinam Nikalpanam means to ascribe your own imaginary notions to the name. Like to create your own meaning to the name. Like to make the name be adjusted to your own thoughts, if you will. And of course, in a way that contradicts Shastra. Because there is place to think about the name in so many ways. We are trying to share some different ways of doing so, but all of them should be in the context of revelation, not just, okay, the name is what I like it to be for me. No. It doesn't work like that. No, it's not trying to accommodate, no, or to force the name to mean what I like it to mean. No, that's not the way to address transcendence, but the opposite. No, it's not, I have my list of desires, of samskars, of preconceived conclusions and prejudices, so I already have that fixed list with me, and the reality has to adjust with this. So this is my list, and hey, you reality, adjust to that. Now I'm included. It's not working like that. So that's why the Bhagavatam say, Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Haritsaro Asisri Tekshitapati Nanunata Punsam. This verse, Brahma is saying, according to how a devotee meditates on Bhagavan, Bhagavan reveals the corresponding form. But then he says, Sruta Ikshita. that meditation and that form has to do with what one sees through Shruti, through hearing sacred revelation. In other words, it's not that Bhagavan will take any form and you will meditate in any way about him. There are certain parameters about how, which type of bhakti can be expressed and which is the corresponding form to that bhakti. It's not that, for me, Bhagavan has three horns and a blue head and yellow arms and he plays drums and rides on a skateboard and you're just projecting, you're an artist and samskar and you want God to fit into that mixture. He's not forced to do that. So the same with the name, which is not different from Bhagavan. It's not that he will mean whatever you like it to mean. No, the name already has a meaning, a lot of meaning, and you are to connect with that from one of those legal perspectives, if you will. No? But if you don't do so and just project your imagination, that's Harinam Nikalpanam, an offense to the name. So of course, how to counteract that, similarly than the previous ones. Trying to be properly educated about what the name is, which are those meanings, and how imagination cannot touch transcendence, basically. No matter how wild is your imagination, that's still in the context of your limited experience in the material realm. You cannot go beyond that with your imagination. As bizarre as your imagination can be, it won't touch transcendence, because for that you need an experience of that first.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is it similar? Could you also consider, like, taking things from other religious traditions, like God as a punisher, or, you know, different conceptions of God, and then laying that over the name or Krishna? Would that also fall into that?
Into this one, the last one.
Yeah. Or would that also be considered some kind of aparad?
Well, depending on what are you taking, because when we say we take things from other religions, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that there are different elements to the ones we have in our religion. So that, you follow my point. So, I mean, other religions may speak of God as a punisher in one way, and we can find that in our tradition as well. It's not that that's not present. Of course, in which sense he's a punisher, I mean, we have to, again, recalibrate the glossary, because there may be a lot of prejudice and trauma already included with that word, with that notion, God, punisher. But the word punishment, literally, if you take just the word punishment, doesn't necessarily mean cruel, bad person. Now, if I'm a father and my kid is misbehaving, I may punish him out of affection, because I don't want him to make that mistake again, and will come with some loving concern so you don't make the same mistake. In that sense, punishment is synonymous for affection. So in that sense, we can say, on a certain degree, God punishes. Of course, when we say God, that will may not much maybe apply to Krishna lost in his lila. But that function of that we call karma, if you want to put it like that, I mean, you can take it as punishment. It's mostly education. It's an educational method that we may feel as punishment, but it's an affectionate one. So my point is, there's a place to connect all that, and it's not out of our tradition. So it's not that you are like projecting like foreign ideas. But I'm not saying that you cannot do that. You can, of course, also make some mismatch and hodgepodge. And yeah, in that case, it may be considered some form of this later nama parath, no? Like you are like mixing things out of the, and that's of course goes back to the fourth offense, which is Shruti Shastra Nindanam, not offend Vedic revelation, if you will. In other words, means okay, Vedic revelation gives revelation, so whatever you may take in other directions, from other directions, it has to somehow align with that, no? Because if not, yeah, it's a way of even going, incurring in the fourth one. Let's go to the seventh one. We briefly mentioned that before. Engage in sin on the strength of the name. So that's again very This is another one of the worst ones. This can be the worst. That's what. Because it has to do with, instead of serving the name, which is the idea, Nam Seva, we are engaging the name of our own service. So I'm doing this sin, oh, the reaction is coming, please Nam, be merciful, protect me. But you are not wanting to stop sinning. So you are just resorting to the Nam whatever, whenever you need, and just serve me, help me, help me, but I continue being the same person, I'm not changing. And in this case, you are using the Sutta Nam, the pure name, I mean, you are not chanting Sutta Nam, but the name is pure, to clean your abominable sins, if you will. So that's not, it's like, sometimes they say, like, to making the emperor clean your toilet. But we are not willing to serve the emperor. No. Of course, that won't happen. The emperor, hey, can't clean my toilet. But the idea is you are exploiting grace, basically. Instead of honoring grace, instead of serving grace, you are using grace. And using it to justify the unjustifiable, I will say. Because you should stop sinning. So if you invoke the name to continue sinning, that's like unjustifiable. But you are trying somehow to justify that under the garb of, I'm calling God to help me. But actually what you are doing is using the strength of name so you can continue sinning more effectively. So that's like very ruin, you say in English? Ruin? La palabra ruin? How do you say it? There's a word in English for that? Ruin. In Spanish we say ruin. Ruin.
Ruin. Ah.
Ruination.
But not like a noun, like an adjective. Let me see. Despicable, contemptible. Okay, those are the words. In Spanish, it's a ruin. So that's the idea. In the Bible, they have this idea, do not take the name of God in vain. So it's kind of that. Interestingly, vain, you have the word vanus in Latin. Vanus means like empty. So the idea is, do not use the word of God in an empty way. Do not invoke his name in an empty way, in a superficial way, while conducting yourself superficially. No? Empty means superficial, basically. So don't be, again, we go to yesterday's obstacle, superficiality or complacency, all of them are interconnected. So do not invoke the name in vain means do not call the name superficially, or trying to use the name to justify your superficiality, a life of sin. So be aware of those mechanisms, inner mechanisms that are preventing authenticity in yourself. This one of these, as we spoke yesterday. Those things that are preventing authenticity in my addressing the name. Or another variety of this one, not necessarily to indulge in sin and justify it through Nam, but to engage in aparat, another aparat, seva aparat, as we say. Oh, okay, I can offend Doji Gopal while worshipping them is seva aparat, but then I can go and take shelter in Nam. And whenever you engage in other aparat, Nam's still there. To calculate like that is falls in the same category, basically. So that becomes Nam aparat, because this is the aparat. You follow the point. Huh? So at the end, of course, the conclusion here is be honest, be sincere, don't be duplicitous. And if you realize you have done that again, proper repentance, proper surrendering, proper association, proper guidance, proper mercy, as usual. As you will see, all the magical formula is always the same. So that makes a point always, no? Okay, all the offenses are different, but the way to counteract them, the way to avoid them, is always the same. So if you keep focusing that always the same, we actually don't need to explain any of these things in detail. But we have to be focusing on those things. Let's go to the eighth one, which is to equal Srinam with pious material actions, prescribed in Shastra, like Karma Kanda, these sections of Shastra, and make, this is the same. Material piety and chanting of Srinam belong to the same category. So we can do either. It's no difference. No, there is a difference. Of course, Shastra will prescribe different ways of purifying yourself. Indirectly, it will recommend indirectly, okay, engage in material piety. For some people, that's where they can begin. Be a good person, be a good human, give charity, do some sacrifice, give your, how do you say in English, your tithing?
Tithing,
okay. So something, begin of gratitude, acknowledge how you are being provided by the devas and so on. So that's an indirect way of, it's more in material terms, but there's a direct transcendental way, which again is chantrina. That's real purification in every sense of the term. So my point is, the two of them shouldn't be put on the same category because they do not belong to in the same position. There is a place for the other one, but it's not the same. So the same, how to counteract this one? Proper association, proper sambandhagyan, proper education. Everyone, all of them are, again, the antidote is unanimous to every apparat. But again, we have to engage in this antidote with authenticity. Not just, okay, I know what to do when I do up. I know the magical formula. You have to feel that, to do that. Let's go to the ninth one. Almost there. The ninth one is to instruct people who is devoid of faith and who are uninterested in hearing, nonetheless to instruct them. And sometimes this is further clarified, to instruct them about the glories of the name. But it can go even without that. To instruct them if they don't want to be instructed, if they are not willing to hear, and nonetheless you push. No. You try to sell the book nonetheless. If you want to put it like that. Of course, Mahaprabhu says, Yare Dikka Dare Kaha Krishnam, instruct everyone you meet about Krishna. But provided that they are willing to hear. Something like that. No, but if you, after you instruct someone or you share something, you expose, not impose, expose. No? It's exposition, not imposition. If you do that, but the person is not showing interest, person is not showing faith or enthusiasm about, so you can continue speaking, then you shouldn't force that person, in the context of the name, I don't know, to take the japa mala. No? And take, chant. And the person doesn't have even a clue what's going on. I've heard that sometimes. And they have been even initiated on the Sunday feast in mass, and they don't even know that they were initiated. And they were after that, what's the name of that person who gave me this rosary? Oh, he's your guru. What's that guru mean? What was my name? All that, this thing. Like. Or they even, then, oh, I was initiated. What's that? What's initiation? And the person just went for casually. And of course, for some reason, the person is there, but that doesn't mean, for some reason, you are here. Take the japa mala or something. I want to speak to force that. And that's an offense to the name. Again, you are throwing the name in a way, in an improper recipient, if you will. The recipient is not yet ready, according in terms of faith, to honor that descent. Mm-hmm. Especially that's offensive for the one giving, of course, the instruction and so on. And the Gita at the end is making that point always. Not like the Gita is sharing this doctrine of love, but then says, you have to know where to share this. And Krishna says to Arjuna, do not share this with the envious person, do not share it with this. Not because he doesn't want, but he knows they won't be able to take it yet. Mm-hmm. Or in the Mangalacharan of different books, in the invocation of different books, always they mention the adhikara of the reader. Jiva Goswami makes at the beginning of the Sandarbhas, only someone who has faith in bhakti and so on should read this book. So if you are reading the book and you don't have faith in bhakti, you are being, I mean, he's not forbidding you to read, but he's preventing you. If you don't have Shraddha, you may, who knows what you will understand from this book. Better not read this book. Mm-hmm. Things like this, no? So, so it's interesting because here they say, okay, you shouldn't instruct about the name to those who lack faith. Indirectly, what is being said here is faith is the qualification for hearing, receiving the name. Of course, there are degrees of faith and so on, but the point is, to be instructed on Srinam, Shraddha is the adhikar, basically. That's the minimum requirement from bhakti. Shraddhavan Jannahi, Shraddhavan Jannahi, that's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur thinks. Oh man, people of faith, people of faith. That's what Nityananda Prabhu is asking in his Namahatta. He's not asking anything, just a little bit of faith and here you have. and he's just drowning you in mercy. But that Shraddha has to be there again. Some conviction about what's there in the name, minimum, on some basic level, some Shastriya Shraddha on some sort. And of course, if the offense has been engaged in, unfortunately, the person should again beg mercy to Srinam, try to increase one's understanding of how to deal with Srinam and with others in the context of giving Srinam, and analyze one's of motives. I don't know if someone is serving as a guru, and you're giving the name. What are your motives for giving the name? No, which are your real intentions? Rupa Goswami is saying, a guru shouldn't have too many disciples. A guru shouldn't open too many temples, write too many books. Of course, what's too many? That's a relative consideration. As I like sometimes say, for some people to have even one disciple is too many. And for other people to be a disciple is too much. Yeah. And they are not ready to be instructed. That's okay. We are not condemning there. It's just like, don't force something in an unripe moment. So as a guru, you have to be very careful about you, who you are instructing, who you are giving the name, what you are expecting, and so on. Sometimes some personal motivations may be there. No, I want more disciples, more followers, more supporters, more money, more numbers. So all of you are initiated by me now. Okay, I have 108 disciples in one weekend. But half of them do not even know that they are your disciples. That's only Namaparad. No, although externally it seems, wow, you have so many disciples. Namaparad. That's the actual reality. Let's go to the 10th one. A few more minutes with your patience. So the 10th one is that despite hearing the glories of the name, Nam Mahatmya, despite being properly educated and informed all that is in the name, nonetheless remain devoid of affection for the name and continue absorbed in a sense of I, me, mine, Aham Mameti. So that may be the worst one also. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. He said, this offense is the most, which were the words I used before? Despicable?
Despicable.
This is the most despicable of all the offenses, he's saying. Because this represents exact antithesis of surrender to Bhagavan. That despite I've heard the glories of the name, and I understand, I know them, I don't make the necessary effort to transcend my present condition. So it's mostly speaking about complacency again and hypocrisy. In not doing what I need to do. It's not so much, I may have still some anarthas and I'm trying to do my best, but still that may take time. In that case, it doesn't fall in this category. It's about, you know what's the name, you know where you are, you know what you should do, but you are not doing that. You're just indifferent. You are not doing what you need to do to improve your present condition. Again, this doesn't have to do with having so much certain anarthas despite your efforts. You follow? So just in case, again, this is a non-neurotic approach to Nam Aparad. Don't go neurotic, Akshay. Just in case. Okay, if you are sincerely doing what you can do and still there is a way to go, it's okay. We are not speaking about that. We are speaking here about, you know the glories of the name and so on, but you are not doing what you should do, and instead you make a show of chanting and you are a devotee and la 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 la. And again, you are kind of using the whole thing. So, hypocrisy, basically. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. This is the form of hypocrisy. You continue with your life secretly in the context of Aham Mameti, promoting your attachments and sense of mundane self. You are not working on that. And you know the glories of the name, but you are not trying to improve. But you present yourself as you are like the paka, sadhu of the community, who knows what. So of course, in that case, we should counteract this offense. Again, properly, proper association, proper sambandha gyan, proper shelter in sadhus who through their association will touch my heart to the point of realizing my own duplicity or hypocrisy, if that's there. Hopefully that's not there, but it can be there. So we need some antidote to that, if that's the case. No? get close to that person who are taking the name fully, so I can learn how to do that also in a more comprehensive way in my own case. So these are the 10 offenses, and sometimes there is an 11th one added to the list, as if this is not enough. So the journalist includes in the 10th one sometimes. So I'll share that with you if you allow me one more. which generally just described as pramada. And pramada sometimes is translated as inattention, but also pramada means can be translated as madness. Or pramada, a very special type of madness called inattention. And what's the meaning of inattention here? Again, because we can go neurotic very easily, because we may be inattentive while chanting constantly. But here, inattention means like, how do you say in English? Descuido. Neglect. Yeah, to be neglectful of something. Again, it's connected to the previous one, and that's why they are put together sometimes. Now, it's connected to madness. Why this is connected to madness? Just make the point. I mean, if you are imploring Krishna to descend in the form of his name, which is what happened, we say Hare Krishna, but simultaneously you neglect him and don't pay proper attention, that's basically madness. You follow? If I call you, I don't know, Lisa, please come. And Lisa comes, sits, and I start to behave like if she doesn't exist in front of me. And she was like, well, you call me. And you call me pretty strongly. It was urgent. I felt there was... And I don't even reply to you. Like I'm not hearing you. I just say, Maharaj, are you okay? You seem like mad. You follow the point. That's why this idea of pramada is tied. No? Inattention or neglect with madness. Mm-hmm. Like you're inviting someone... And the person is immediately there, as we already said. It's not taking some time. Krishna says, okay, I'm descending in a few hours. Now you say, Hare, already there. And simultaneously, you are not paying attention to that descent. So that doesn't sound sober. Srila Siddha Maharaj describes this same offense in his own words. He said, that's an interesting way how he puts that. If we are very careful in trying to avoid the transformation that Srinam is inviting us to, and instead we persist in our way of present living, we will engage in one offense in the name, which is invite it and then ignore it. So it's not just about ignore the name, but the name is coming with, as Guru Maharaj will say, with his agenda. And the name is coming inviting us to certain transformation. So if we call the name, Krishna comes, but Krishna comes not passively, it's coming with some content to give, and you totally avoid the transformation as much as you can, that falls into this category. Inviting Krishna, ignore him. Ignore his intention. Like we say these days, you ask him for mercy, he sends mercy, and then you ask him, give me mercy for contracting that mercy. It's like, what's going on? That's madness. So these are different ways of speaking about aparat, different ways of aparat towards others or towards our, I would say, we could say we can even, again, not to invoke any type of neurosis, but for example, when you say Vaishnava aparat, you can also conceive Vaishnava aparat as to offend the own Vaishnava vision that is in your, has come to your life, and only to offend other Vaishnavas. But by the grace of Guru, I'm a Vaishnava of some sort. And if I go against my best interest as a Vaishnava, this self-Vaishnava apparat, if you want to go to like that. No. Vaishnavism has knocked on my door, and I'm being neglectful or hypocrite with that. That's another way. So again, sometimes the example, just to conclude with this, no? Nam sometimes is considered like a great tonic, like a great rasayana, like this Ayurveda uses this tonic rasayana, which means like something that cures you from illnesses, but also that nourishes you when you are healthy. So you can keep taking them always. So the Nam is the same. It's curing you, but then it's providing so much positive content. Sorry? Life-giving nectar, yeah. So, but the powerful medicine, let's go for a minute to Ayurveda. A powerful medicine, of course, kind of a relief. But if it's consumed as prescribed, it's not that you just take, grab and eat, whatever. No. But also, a certain medicine can prove extremely dangerous if you take them in an unprescribed manner. In other words, something that can save you, something that can alleviate some disease, can also kill you. No? So similarly, the point here is that the name can award the highest blessing, not only freedom from suffering, but divine love. But if you offend the name, it can also, the attitude in itself, not the name, but your own attitude can intensify your own, you follow, your own objectionable attitude, if you will. If you don't realize that and change that, that can self-feed itself and become more and more self-conditioning. So as it is so important to understand the greatness of the name, we have tried to do that in our second meeting. What's the name, all the glories of the name, that's very important. But also we could say it's equally important to understand the offense to be avoided, the prescription of the medicine, if you want to put it again in Ayurvedic terms. For an Ayurveda, for a medicine to be effective, patient has to follow the prescription. Again, it has to avoid forbidden food. There are do's and don'ts. Okay? So this is similar. Now for the Nam, who is like Rasayana Nam, the tonic-like, life-giving name, to be effective, we as practitioners, as patients, should chant it in a prescribed manner and avoid junk food, if you will, in the form of these apparats. Now the offense is mentioned today. In other words, there is a lifestyle that should accompany our chanting. This is the implication of all this, as I also already mentioned. These offenses are, you can engage in apparat not only when you are sitting chanting or in the kirtan. It can happen at every moment. So the chanting is to be accompanied by a lifestyle, as Guru Maharaj will say. Your sitting is to be accompanied by your standing. What do you do with your walking? You have to walk your talk, or you have to walk your sitting. And so on. You follow my point. So avoiding the offenses is like a very, comprehensive practice. It's not just, okay, I will sit for the next hour, I will be careful of not offending the Vaishnavas. But there are no Vaishnavas, you are just in your room chanting. I mean, you may be offending them in your mind, but the point is then you wake up and you stand up and relate to the Vaishnavas in the daily life. How do you behave in that moment? That's also a very important part, your relationships with others. Speaks a lot about your idea. So we are trying to build a whole lifestyle around anukul nam seva. Anukul means favorable, a favorable culture of a favorable lifestyle, a lifestyle that will create a favorable culture of the name. So when we sit to chant, our whole lifestyle is there supporting us, not on the contrary. And again, as I mentioned before, in the Bhagavatam, there are so many stories about that. Now, if you pay attention to, stories of Chitraketu, Vritrasura, Ajamil, Indradyubna, so many, many more, that try to explain the intricacies of aparat. Now, there are many stories in the Bhagavatam, someone engaged in aparat, this happened. And how to counteract, what's the proper spirit, what's the prayer. So in fact, we can see the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, As an attempt to educate us about offenses, what we are talking here. And why? Because we are in Kali Yuga. So Kali Yuga, chanting is prescribed as the Yuga Dharma. So the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam is manifested, the Bhagavatam itself is saying, is manifested as the sun in Kali Yuga to provide shelter, ambition for the people of Kali. So you connect the dots. The Bhagavatam is coming in Kali to provide vision to us in Kali, and in Kali the Yuga Dharma is chanting. So we need vision in regards to chanting, and the Bhagavatam is providing vision for the people of Kali, has to provide vision in relation to chanting. So we can see the whole Bhagavatam revolving around how to chant the holy name. But in brief, just to conclude, all these apparats, just to summarize all lists of 10 or 11, basically what they are telling you is don't be complacent, again, hypocrite, ungrateful. Those are the don'ts. No? In general, besides the specific activity, here we are not being prevented so much of the hot sins. Sometimes they are described lust and so on. But don't be duplicitous, anger, hypocrite, ungrateful, complacent. But again, going back to the positive approach to that, be humble, grateful, be authentic, be sincere, take proper shelter. And if the latter is the case, this class is no longer necessary. If the latter is the case, there's no possibility of real aparat. If you remain in a humble mood, open for learning, open for transformation, willing to beg forgiveness, to ask for help, there is no possibility of aparat, technically speaking. If we are sincerely making an effort not to engage in aparat, which we should, no? By invoking the positive counterpart, if we are making an effort to remain grateful, humble, loving, that effort in itself is freeing, sincere effort is freeing ourselves from namaparat, from all namaparat. So I hope you feel some hope and not neurosis at the end of this lecture. So if you are sincerely making some effort to avoid namaparat, then there is no namaparat. In other words, namaparat means to chant without doing the necessary effort to avoid namaparat. That's namaparat. Namaparat means not make the necessary effort to avoid namaparat. If you are making the effort and still you are doing that, but you are trying to avoid that, but somehow you fell into that, that's not namaparat. Bhaktivinoda Thakur called that Shraddha Namabhas, interestingly. He creates a category of his own to describe that in-between stage. No? That's not aparat, because you are sincerely willing to change, but it happened somehow. So, but you will change, I will continue. That's not aparat, he will say. So that's okay. Thank you, Bhaktivinoda Thakur Kija. So that's the grace of... And you keep chanting, that's the idea. Of course, it's not because sometimes devotees may think, I'll start to chant less, so I commit less aparat. And that's not the formula. I'll stop chanting altogether, and there's no aparat. No, that's not the formula. And you may engage in aparat nonetheless, as you can see the list, without chanting even. So the idea is continue chanting by paying proper attention, becoming properly aware, and gradually everything will come. That, like the example that Sri Rupa Goswami gives in Nupati Shambhrita of jaundice. Now, in the beginning, you may be chanting. He gives, you know what jaundice is? This is sickness that you don't feel the taste of sweet things. That's a big karma. And not only that, you taste Shamsundar's ice cream and it tastes like bitter. Oh my gosh. You don't want that. Especially with Shamsundar's ice cream. The whole retreat is ruined. Imagine, you come here and you got jaundice and he tells, I'm planning to have ice cream 3 days in a row. Probably we make group suicide or something. So my point is, he's given this example of jaundice. You know it's sweet, but it tastes bitter. So this is with the name. You are chanting the name and you hear all the things that you know. It's sweet, I know it's sweet. And you even had a glimpse of that at some point. You taste sweet before jaundice. You know what sweetness is, but now it's bitter. And Rupa Goswami say, keep chanting, because the cure for jaundice is continue eating sweets. As bitter as that may sound, you are getting cured. Now you feel the bitterness keeps coming. But from a bigger picture, you are getting cured. But still bitter. You are getting cured. Shut up and keep chanting. But understand what's taking place also. No, not just shut up and keep chanting. It's a way of saying that, of course. No? Understand that you are getting cured. This is the treatment. This is how you get. But of course, keep chanting with proper spirit, proper attitude. Not hypocrite, not complacent. Sincerely, gradually, even if some aparat is coming, although you don't want to engage in aparat, you are making effort to that. That type of chanting, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur labels Shraddha Namabhas, gradually will free you from every obstacle, and the sweetness of the name will come and will overflow and capture everything. So there is hope, non neurosis, but full hope again. Trust grace, trust and follow grace. That was the motto of the retreat. So anyhow, some words we want to share today about today's topic of namaparat, and tomorrow we will have our almost last meeting, penultimate official meeting of the retreat, we could say. before Janmashtami and Nandotsa, Prabhupada, Savibhava. Tomorrow we will be speaking about prayer again. No? Our Guru Maharaj spoke a little bit about Bandhanam on Sunday, like more in the context of offering prayers. But he makes this point that also we can conceive this idea of chanting the name in a prayerful way. So we'll try to speak about that, no? Accessing the domain of prayer. No? What's the meaning of that? And as usual, some brief homework before finishing, just in case, which always are generally the same, which are, of course, trying to chant today, tomorrow morning before the class, trying to become aware of what we have been speaking today here, how that plays out in our particular lifestyle, and what we can do to invoke the next transformation, if you will. And also, I was thinking, as I mentioned at the end, to journalize a little bit about the following, since this, what we spoke today, is not just to be applied when we are sitting to chant, but it has to be applied in our daily dynamics, and relationships are so crucial in this connection. To journalize a little bit about how our chanting is affected by how we relate to others, especially, in this case, the Vaishnavas, we could say, but to everyone. In the bigger picture, so we can make some list or some reflection, whatever you think is important or you would like to reflect upon, how my chanting is affected by my relation to others, for better, for worse, and what can I do to, of course, to always invoke the best part of that. Okay,
cool. Can you go the other way also, how your relationship with others affects your...
Yeah, of course. I just mentioned that side of the coin, but of course we can speak about how proper relationship with others will in turn be an investment for the moment of sitting with Srinam and my relationship with Srinam, for sure. Yeah. So any question, any comment, something else before finishing today? Shri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Shri Lagurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrind ki jai, Gaur Premanand Hari Bol.